Let me tell you what my deep research and basically vision is.
I hope there's Bigfoot. I don't think there is.
I'm not telling you nothing.
the aliens won't let it happen.
Happening now, breaking.
Bernie Sanders is a
Bears beats Battlestar Galactica.
What are the tips? Give me some tips on how to work with Wes Anderson.
Be ready to speak very fast and very clearly, because that's definitely one key thing.
I will only tell the truth.
Until you and six kids you barely know in wet bathing suits have surrounded nine chimpanzees outside of a Wendy's, you probably really don't know yourself, okay?
Yep. And we back.
Hello and welcome. You're listening to your new favorite podcast and the best in political, sports, and paranormal news coverage. I'm your host, Wes Anderson, and this is In the Shed. This is episode 32, so whether you're back for more or finding us for the first time this week, hey, thanks for tuning in. It's late Friday night, January 28th, and I am in a shed in the backyard of my home in Alabama. Also, I can hang out with you tools and talk about the latest headlines, stories, and rumors, politics, sports, and the paranormal. My tools, my babies, my people. Tonight, we are joined again by a close friend of the show, Joshua Teasley, college student, Renaissance man, and he's got some information tonight on the nation of North Korea. Joshua, thanks for joining us tonight.
Hey, thank you for having me on again. I had a blast last time, had fun talking to all of you, and I'm glad to be back. Thank you for having me back again. It's a nice break from all the pains of studying, which I have done a lot of this last week.
For sure. We're glad to have you. The last time, if you remember, Joshua was on episode 25 of the show where he came on to discuss the moon landing. He is an expert on things like North Korean propaganda, the moon landing, and some wrestling. So we've had him on already to talk about two of the three, and maybe we'll have him on later to talk about some wrestling, but he's joining us again tonight. Joshua, before we jump into the show, have you been keeping up with or have you heard about the brouhaha between Joe Rogan and Neil Young and Spotify?
You know, I heard about it. I know that Joe Rogan has been under a lot of heat for, and this is no claim that he is doing this. I'm simply saying what they have accused him of. They've accused him of spreading misinformation about COVID, about the vaccine.
Misinformation.
I know, yes. You talked a good bit about Joe Rogan with the whole thing with ivermectin and the way, I think it was CNN blew it up.
Yeah, for sure.
So I've seen a couple little things about it, like a couple little headlines, but I had more important things in my life than to care about two people that I don't know, you know.
you don't listen to Neil Young.
No, I won't lie. I didn't know who he was until this whole thing happened.
I know who he is, but I don't really listen to his music that much. It's really funny to me, the whole brouhaha and wanting to pull Joe Rogan off of Spotify. It's like, Spotify gave that man $100 million contract. I don't think because an artist that's like 78 years old, I don't know how old he is, but he's up there. I don't think just because he's like, hey, it's me or him. Like, the choice was probably pretty easy for Spotify. Mm-hmm. Unless like Taylor Swift or Drake or people that folks who are younger than 40 actually listen to, unless those folks start pulling their music, then Spotify might reevaluate. But I just think it's interesting. I keep hearing all this about misinformation, but I don't actually hear them say what the misinformation was. You know, they pull quotes out from a 3-hour podcast. He's a comedian. Sometimes the things he says are pretty tongue in cheek. He has guests on, asks questions. Sometimes he says, I'm not an expert. This might be wrong. Let's look it up. So it's just interesting to me to see how that whole picture is painted. I've listened to a few of his episodes when he had people on to talk about the pandemic. And some of the stuff, I was kind of like, I'm not sure about that. I didn't take it as medical advice. And I really don't think that misinformation on the Joe Rogan Experience is putting people's lives in jeopardy. But that's the world we live in. You have to be careful what you say. So are you ready to be canceled after tonight?
I have been ready to be canceled for a long time. Please don't actually cancel me.
It might be coming for us. The other thing that I wanted to talk about that I thought was funny before we jump in, man, I've been spending some time online, and I had no idea until recently in the Twitterverse, I found out that apparently most people are of the opinion that Saturday Night Live is no longer funny. That it's a show that is not funny anymore, that all of the old episodes were, but the new ones just aren't. You ever watch Saturday Night Live?
I've watched a couple of, I like the older episodes. The newer ones are kind of funny. Like the stuff they did around the election in 2020 was hilarious.
Right.
Jim Carrey as Joe Biden is one of the best things I've ever seen. But I haven't watched much more than a lot of the older stuff. I love the older stuff.
I agree. Like the older SNL, classic SNL is by far the best and is up there in the pantheon of comedy. I mean, now, you know, they've got Ego Odom and Chris Redd and Heidi Gardner and Kate McKinnon is really good. And if you don't find Kenan Thompson delightful, I don't trust you. Like, I really like Kenan. And even Colin Jost and Michael Shea, they do like the Weekend Update. That segment's really funny. And I know people can't stand him, but I actually think that Pete Davidson is pretty talented and pretty funny.
He is. The whole thing he did on NFTs, parodying Eminem, that was hilarious.
Yeah. And so, like, we're talking about music. We didn't, neither one of us listened to Neil Young, but there was a band that played on SNL the other day. I always like to look at the music. And it's pretty funny because a lot of times I'm getting to that age now where I'm starting to like music that when I was younger I would not have, but is also not cool for me to be my age and enjoy. You know what I mean?
Oh, I know what you mean.
There's this band, and they're called Måneskin, I think is how they say it. They're like an Italian band. It looks like Manskin or Måneskin. And I was like, is this band called Manskin? They're not. They're called Måneskin. Do you know that band?
Never heard of the band ever.
Okay, so I didn't think I did either, but then when they perform, they sing this song. Their lead singer has a very distinctive voice, and they sing that song where he's like, I'm begging you. You know that song?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you heard that on the radio?
I have.
So I thought they were weird. Like, they were super weird but fun. I thought that was good. And then the other person I saw on there that I actually liked that's kind of embarrassing, but I don't even care, is Olivia Rodrigo. You know her?
Good for you.
That's right. I don't know, something about her music just make me happy. And I'm a hip hop head. Like, I love hip hop music, and I never would have listened to music like that in high school. But now at like 32, I just was like, I like this music. And Charcy, my wife, was like, what are you talking about? And I'm like, I don't know, I just like it. So yeah, I'd be going around the house and I just sing, you know, if my wife says something to me that I don't like, I'd just be like, good for you. You look happy and healthy. Not me. If you even care to ask. And she's like, that's too much. You just, why do you know that? And I'm like, I don't know. But yeah, so I don't think Spotify, you know, if they get some younger artists that pull out and a whole bunch of them at the same time, maybe it will matter. I don't think that they're worried about Neil Young and Barry Manilow. That was the other guy that joined in with Neil Young. But anyway, let's get to some corrections and comments from our last show. Not a lot of them tonight. We got to leave time to learn about North Korea with Joshua. Keystone 349, Hanobia 328, Townsend 243. Do you know what those things mean, Joshua?
I do not.
Ooh, see, this is like the longest running inside joke with no payoff. I read those numbers off. They grow every time we host a show. Those are Bigfoot festivals. Those are towns where Bigfoot festivals are held. Keystone, South Dakota, I think. Hanobia, Illinois, Townsend. I don't remember where those are. But anyway, those are the number of days that have passed since I invited myself but have not received an official invitation to bring the show and host an episode of In the Shed with Wes Anderson, counting the number of days I have not been included or invited. And it's almost been a year. I don't know if I'll let it go or if I'll just keep doing this forever. Eventually, somebody's going to hear one of these episodes and be like, oh, wait, I know somebody that works at that Bigfoot Festival. And then I'll get an invite.
Got to keep believing, just like you got to keep believing.
I'm trying. Anyway. No time for further comments and corrections tonight, but I do want to give a quick shout out to our 7 new listeners in Germany this week. Welcome to the family. And to ask that wherever and however you're listening tonight, whether on Good Pod, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts, please do us a solid. Leave us a 5-star review. If you guys continue to subscribe, like, review, and share the show, we will continue growing this thing together. We've got a great show for you tonight, but first let's get to some listener emails. Joshua, you want to hear some emails?
Let's hear him.
All right. Our first email comes from Ty in Austin, Texas. Ty writes, Wes, just wanted to say hi. That's the whole email. That's the whole thing. He just, hello, Ty. I have said on the show many times, you could just write an email to say hello. And Ty from Austin, Texas is the first person to take me up on that. So hello, Ty. Thanks for listening to the show. Our second email comes to us from Amelia from Ohio, who writes, Wes, I get the criticism of President Biden not doing a ton of interviews, but he's kind of trying to save a nation from a pandemic. So last week on the show, we talked how President Biden in his first year in the presidency had very few interviews and very few press conferences compared to all of the last five presidents. Yeah, I mean, I get it, Amelia. He's in a pandemic. It's unprecedented times. That's fair. That's valid. But, you know, if you are in that position, I think that, you know, you're missing an opportunity if you don't take the time to meet with the press, to share your accomplishments, to push your agenda, to kind of try to have control of the narrative. So I think what you're saying is valid. But I also think the man has to step up his game when it comes to doing interviews with the press. Any comment on that, Joshua?
You know, I feel like I have two sides to this. One is like, yes, he's saving the nation from a pandemic and whatever, however you want to put that, working on it, like trying to make it better. I still think he could do interviews. I don't think that should, it doesn't seem like it'd be that hard to do interviews, if that makes sense. But on the other hand, it's like, I will most likely never know what it's like to be president. I won't know what it's like to be, what it's like for him right now. So I feel like to a degree, we can't really say anything about whether or not he is doing any interviews right now, considering like the situation in the country. And
yeah,
we just won't be able to be in his shoes to know what he's doing. And I mean, we've seen how his interviews tend to go.
Right. So, well, first of all, don't speak too soon. Teasley 2054, print the bumper stickers. I'm calling it right now. Invite me to the White House when you're there.
You can be my VP.
Yeah. I don't think that would work. I'm not good at, you know, I think they would, I would probably get us both canceled and fired, but thank you for the invite. But yeah, I don't know. I think that's fair. I think we talked last time. I think Donald Trump did, I don't remember if it was 72 or 92, but he did either 72 or 92 interviews in his first year as president, and Joe Biden did 22. So that kind of highlights, like, yes, Trump loved to hear his name in the press, and he was probably overboard a little bit, but if you're the president, you probably need to stand in front of reporters and answer questions. Our last email comes to us from Tony S. from New Mexico, who writes, Wes, I love the coverage of the conspiracy theory that Elvis faked his death, but the version you shared has been thoroughly debunked. Please don't become yet another podcast spreading misinformation that puts others' lives at risk. Tony, I don't know how misinformation about Elvis killing himself puts anybody's life at risk. I don't know if that's supposed to be tongue-in-cheek and you're being sarcastic and mocking cancel culture. If so, you're very smart. Otherwise, I don't know what to tell you, bud. Yeah, so the story that we shared last week was from Elvis's actual cousin and one of his best friends that claimed that Elvis paid a cancer patient to have reconstructive surgery. And then when the cancer patient who was already dying passed away, they swapped out the bodies and Elvis kind of slinked out the back and took off. And it was because, like, Elvis wanted to get away from fame and start over. And the cancer patient didn't have a way for his family to be taken care of after he died. That was the story. And it literally was started by his actual literal cousin. I have seen where the cousin came out afterward and said, yeah, I just kind of thought that that was silly and funny. I didn't think it would actually get printed or anyone would run with it. But I also have a hard time believing, like, what's the point of you saying it in the first place? Like, you did know people would print that. Like, you did know that Elvis was one of the most famous people in the world when he died. And, you know, this is one of those conspiracy theories I no longer believe to be true, but I sure did as a child. And there's some weird stuff around it. There is a recording 2 years after Elvis passed away that voice experts claim is his actual voice. It was proven that it was recorded after he passed away. And it's spookily close to Elvis's voice. There also was the issue that we shared about his tombstone. His middle name is allegedly misspelled. Which is a weird, why would that happen? And if it was a mistake, why wouldn't you fix it? You have plenty of money in his estate. And then there was even like this sighting, we briefly touched on it. We didn't go into a lot of detail last week, but there was this sighting that happened at Graceland a day or so after he died, where you could see like an outline of somebody that looked very much like Elvis inside one of the homes. So there's some weird stuff around that. We picked one of the stories to share that we thought was more interesting and one of the newer ones that I had heard. I do not think that Elvis faked his death. I think that that was an interesting story. And for your sake and mine, Tony S., I hope that you are just being silly, because I don't know how that puts anyone's life at risk. But if Taylor Swift or Olivia Rodrigo wants to pull their music from Spotify until I'm canceled, I guess that's just the risk I'm taking. Well, that's all the listener emails this week. If you have any thoughts that you'd like to share, you can email the show at intheshedwithwes@gmail.com. Again, that's intheshedwithwes@gmail.com. I might even read it on air. Let's switch to this, the news in the world of politics, and let's hit the headlines. Pennsylvania court rules mail-in voting unconstitutional, a win for election integrity, writes Breitbart. This is going to be a gigantic change. Biden tours damage of bridge collapse in Pittsburgh, reports the Independent Journal Review. China's ambassador to the U.S. warns of military conflict over Taiwan, says NPR. From Yahoo News, Fox News host Dan Bongino permanently banned from YouTube. And finally, Justice Stephen Breyer is retiring, and Biden will now get his first Supreme Court pick, and that is according to BuzzFeed. Our first story in the world of politics, I did not overpromise. Joe Biden defends his first year in a marathon press conference. So last week we talked about how Joe Biden did not do very many press conferences or interviews. So to be fair, because we are a fair show, we're going to start out covering the 2 hour plus marathon press conference that Joe Biden did do. Joe Biden seemed to have a lot he wanted to get off his chest just over an hour into the second press conference of his presidency. In the first since his approval ratings plummeted this fall, Biden stopped referring to his seating chart printed with reporters' faces and names and started calling on anyone shouting questions. "How long are you guys ready to go?" Biden asked. "You want to go another hour?" For 111 minutes, that's a long time. Biden stood at the lectern under the crystal chandeliers of the White House's East Room and defiantly touted his administration's accomplishments during a low moment in his presidency. Biden could have reset the tone and charted a new course for his second year following months of bad news about another spike in COVID-19 infections, skyrocketing prices, the fallout from a chaotic withdrawal from Afghanistan, and Democratic Party infighting that has stalled major pieces of legislation. Instead, Biden doubled down. One day before the anniversary of his inauguration, Biden defended the record of his first year in office, pointing out that he pushed COVID-19 relief funding into American bank accounts, rolled out vaccines to 200 million Americans, saw record employment gains, and passed a bipartisan $1 trillion investment in America's infrastructure. On Afghanistan, Biden said he makes no apologies for his decision to withdraw despite the country falling into the hands of the Taliban and the humanitarian disaster unfolding now. "I did not overpromise," Biden declared about his first year in office, "and I have probably outperformed what anybody thought possible." So Joe Biden had only his second press conference in his presidency. And I talked on the show last week about how if what people are saying about you, people on the right, people that are not fans of yours, if what they're saying about you is that you're feeble-minded and that you have dementia and that you're not able to answer questions from journalists without reading from a teleprompter, if that's what people are saying about you, it is probably not a good strategy to never actually answer questions from the press. It just doesn't make sense to me. So I'm not claiming that Joe Biden or his administration listened to In the Shed with Wes Anderson. I'm just pointing out that we said that the man probably needed to do some press conferences and some interviews. And mere days later, he did a 2 hour plus press conference. I think we get some credit for that. We may have killed Betty White, but we got Joe Biden to speak to the press. Any thoughts about Joe Biden's 2 hour press conference, Joshua?
You know, I think anytime that a president, like our president, comes out to speak is a good thing. Anytime they're there answering questions, you know, that ultimately that's what they should be doing. They should be
right.
they answer to us. The president answers to us, and it's very important to never forget that. You know,
he's supposed to anyway.
Supposed to, right? And yeah. You know, I'm not going to defend if he has dodged doing press conferences and interviews before. The fact is, he did just come out and do a two-hour one to everyone that was saying he won't do this or he's dodging it because he has dementia or knows he can't handle it.
Right.
Happy that nobody should be upset that the president is coming out and speaking. And
yeah, I give him props. I mean, I do. I try. I've said on this show before, and it's so funny because on Twitter, we're up to about 2,200 followers on Twitter. And I get people all the time that are like hardcore Trump supporters. I get people all the time that are really, really left leaning that follow our show. And so sometimes I get accused of being a Biden lackey. Sometimes people are like, you only ever say negative things about President Biden. And the truth is, I'm independent. I did not vote for Donald Trump. I did not vote for Joe Biden. And I think that every president does some things that are good and does some things that are bad, if we are honest. They have accomplishments. They drop the ball. They're human. But I did give President Biden, I think, fairly a hard time last episode for not having press conferences. So I will say the fact that he came out, answered every question, didn't just read off of a teleprompter for 2+ hours is a good start. That's a good start. Now, how about his quote? A reporter asked him, did you overpromise? Like when you were running for election, did you make too many promises? And he says, not only did I not overpromise, I probably accomplished more than anyone thought was possible. What do you think about that quote?
So it doesn't surprise me the fact that he said that. Like if somebody comes up there and challenges what you've done, you're going to defend it, you know?
But don't you think this is kind of a shift that we've seen in politics even since I don't know if Trump started it, but he's things have shifted since Donald Trump was elected president. I feel like, you know, 10, 12, 15 years ago that if an American president was asked that question, they would answer by saying something like, you know, I'm doing the best that I can for the American people. We're trying to hold on to all the promises and fulfill them all that we made when we were running. That's our intention. We face some unprecedented challenges. They would answer it that way, I feel like. But now politicians straight up be like, nope. And in fact, I have done more than you think I have. Like they just come out swinging.
You know, they may be giving a new answer, but it's still the same thing. It kind of makes me laugh. And the same thing when it was like this from 2016 to 2020 with Trump, when people would say, oh, he made promises he couldn't keep. That's what politicians have historically done. That's what presidents have historically done. They say what they need to get elected. They say what sounds good. Like a lot of Biden's promises, like, for example, this is unrelated to COVID, but his promise to forgive student loan debt or cancel it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sounds great. I never expected him to do it. I still don't expect him to do it unless his approval rating just keeps continuing to plummet. Politicians make promises all the time that they never keep. And it makes me laugh when people seem so shocked by it because it's like, it's a politician. What do you expect? That's their job. That's what they do. It's what they're known for doing.
Every 4 years, everyone is just shocked. Oh my gracious. They made all these promises and they have not fulfilled them all. Yeah, it's true. And his approval ratings are really, really bad. His numbers are really, really low. So I think him coming out and just answering everybody's questions and just taking all comers and even being a little defiant is probably a good thing for his presidency and for the way that he's viewed. We did run a poll after last episode on Twitter where we wanted to know from the folks that listened to our show what they thought of President Biden's performance in his first year as president. And essentially the options were he's doing fantastic, he's doing horribly, and it's all right.
I voted.
Which one? It's all right? Like the meh?
Yeah. You know, it could be worse. It could definitely be better, but it could definitely be way worse.
Yeah. Well, and that's the one that won. I mean, overwhelmingly, most people were just like, meh, like, it's all right. So, props to Joe Biden for doing a press conference. It's only his second one. But you know what? If he starts from now and he holds them more regularly, and, you know, one promise he did make that he can make progress on. He promised to have the most transparent administration in U.S. history. And in order to meet that goal, you have to actually be in front of the press and take their questions. So props to President Biden for doing so for over 2 hours, which is a long time. You know, he probably needed a nap afterwards, just as I would need a nap afterwards. In fact, after this conversation, I'm going to go home and take like a 5-hour nap that I call nighttime. But props to President Biden for doing a good job there. Our next story in the world of politics, against U.S. travel advisory, Kanye West is planning a Russia trip to meet and perform Sunday service for Vladimir Putin. Yeah, Kanye West and Vladimir Putin, what could go wrong? Kanye West is headed to the Kremlin. The Grammy-winning hip-hop superstar who recently referred to himself as Young Putin. Oh, boy.
That's not a good title to be labeling yourself.
Of all the things. I mean, I know today rappers, they have horrible names. Like, they need help picking out names. Some of the names these new wave rappers have are so ridiculous. I'm surprised Tupac has not come back from the grave just to beat him up for it. But Young Putin, that's on a different level. Sometimes my children be Young Putins. Young Putin. Okay, he referred to himself as Young Putin. Is reportedly planning to travel to Russia to meet his highest idol. According to Billboard, West's confidant and strategic advisor, Amir Sudan, is planning the jaunt, which includes a gospel-themed Sunday service concert where President Vladimir Putin will be invited as a special guest. Russia is going to be a second home for Ye, Sudan said. He will be spending a lot of time there. The appearance will be West's first performance in the former Soviet Union. Aside from performing, the rapper will explore business and musical opportunities in the country with billionaire real estate developer Aris Agalarov, known as the Trump of Russia, and Agalarov's musician son, Emin. Agalarov is the oligarch credited with setting up Donald Trump Jr.'s infamous June 2016 Trump Tower meeting with Russian lawyer Natalie Veselnitskaya. See how good I did that one? You just got to run through it quick. To dig up dirt on Hillary Clinton, Sudan is working with attorney Scott Balber to coordinate the arrangements. A level 4 do not travel U.S. advisory to the country over terroristic threats, harassment allegations against Russian government security officials, and the arbitrary enforcement of local law won't stop the failed U.S. presidential candidate who is now legally recognized as Ye. After all, Kim Kardashian's estranged husband has proclaimed himself as the greatest artist God has ever created. This is Ye. Ye is going to get there regardless. What are they going to say? Sudan told the outlet. Kanye knows what's going on more than the average human being. He's well aware of things. And it's nothing against the United States or to cause conflict, but Ye is Ye. He cannot be controlled. So in a time where some would say that we might be on the brink of war with Russia, Kanye West is stepping in to smooth things over for the Americans. Do you feel good about that, Joshua?
As someone who studies history and who has studied post-Soviet Russia, that is absolutely terrifying.
I don't know. I'm going to go the other way on this one. I think that Kanye West nuzzling up to Putin is probably the best thing. I think that's how we avoid any type of war with Russia. I mean, this might be like Dennis Rodman and Kim Jong-un. You know, we sent Dennis Rodman. He said he was going to North Korea to hang out with Kim Jong-un. And we were like, hey, that's not a good idea. Please do not do that. And he was like, well, I'm going to do it. And then we were like, okay, here's some talking points. So, you know, maybe the government just needs to get with Kanye and he'll be like our ambassador. You know, play some music, praise the Lord. Young Putin, big Putin, and world peace.
You know, I really, at this point, just can't put anything past Kanye. He'll do just about anything.
Yes, he will. Yes, he will. He cannot be controlled. That part of the article is true. And, you know, what's going on with Russia and Ukraine is so confusing right now. I've been trying to keep up to date on it. I don't know if you've been seeing that news coverage lately.
I have been keeping up with it, yes.
Yeah. So, like, for a day or two, it started to look like a certain invasion of Ukraine by Russia. They've moved a lot of troops over to the border. You know, ever since the USSR kind of dissolved, Russia has always wanted those territories back. But the more that I see coverage from around the world, including reports of Zelensky, the president of the Ukraine, his call with Biden yesterday apparently did not go very well, according to reports from the BBC. And it didn't go well because the guy from the Ukraine was telling President Biden, like, you need to chill out. Like, you need to stop saying that they're definitely going to invade. We don't feel that way. And apparently the UK and the US do, but France and Germany and the Ukraine themselves kind of think that, you know, maybe Russia is preparing to invade, maybe not. We're not so certain. And that's really interesting to me, especially with the poor intelligence that the US had when it comes to weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. And for a long time, the location of bin Laden, when we were trying to hunt him down, it's just interesting to see the way these reports are coming out in our country that say this is definitely happening and we're on the brink of war and we've activated 8,000 troops that we may end up sending over to Ukraine. And then you hear reports from other parts of the world that say, yeah, maybe not, though. Maybe not. And of course, Russia denies it. So I don't know, Josh. Like, I don't really know what to make of it.
Here's the thing about Russia. Russia is so heavily influenced by its Soviet past, by the Soviet Union, even though it's gone now. One of the things that basically that Putin's trying to do is hold on to the last remnants of the Soviet Union, one of those being Ukraine. The Soviet Union and Russia both are notorious for just trying to flex their muscles and put on a show, make it look like it's something that it's not. And to me, I could be wrong, and I'm no expert on this. To me, what it looks like more is Russia's just trying to make itself look bigger than it is.
And almost like some Cold War tactics.
Yes, I don't see this. I don't see this turning into an actual actual hot conflict. I see this becoming a second Cold War. That to me seems pretty likely at this point. Now, we've kind of already been in a Cold War with Russia as is. It's just been a little bit different than just being over nuclear weapons. To me, it's just Russia being Russia. This is what what Russia is going to do.
Well, hey, Russia being Russia and yay being yay. It's going to work out.
It will.
All right, moving on from Russia, our next story in the world of politics. You ready? You ready for this one, Joshua? This is good.
Ready for it.
Our next story, and I actually saved this one just for an episode that you were on the show. Nicolas Cage suffers disrespectful insults from his pet crow. This is a real story, Joshua, and it's very important. And people cannot find this type of news coverage on any other news show except for ours. Are you ready to learn about Nicolas Cage's pet crow?
I am ready to learn about Nicolas Cage's pet crow.
In what is perhaps the most Nicolas Cage that Nicolas Cage has ever been, the actor shared in a recent interview that off-camera he lives a goth lifestyle and has a pet crow who insults him. You cannot make this stuff up, and the LA Times has lots more unfiltering cageness in a wide-ranging profile that also touches on his career, musical tastes, and how he finds happiness. In the piece, Cage discusses his pet crow, Hugin, who lives in a geodesic dome inside Cage's home in Las Vegas. "He's taken to calling me names," said Cage. "When I leave the room, he'll say, bye, and then go, jerk." And that's the whole story.
You know, I have to say that that's a better news story than we hear a lot of times nowadays.
That came across my desk, and first of all, I did not know that crows could talk. This was complete news to me. Did you know this, that crows can talk?
I did actually know that. I just last night watched a video from this guy whose name I'm not going to mention, has a pet crow, and he was talking about how the crow is basically a jerk to him, and he talked about how it could talk, and I actually did somehow know that.
I did not. And I looked it up on YouTube, and they have kind of a deep voice for a bird. But they can mimic other sounds, too. And I knew crows. Okay. Embarrassing tidbit. I once, late at night, went on this deep dive into the rabbit hole of how smart crows are. They're phenomenally intelligent birds. I mean, like at a creepy level. There's all kinds of stories I could share. The one that I'll drop real quick is that there was a family that moved into a home that some crows kind of would come perch in the trees over there. And this crow would watch this little girl play in the backyard. And she had like this one little trinket toy thing that she really loved that was really important to her. Her and her family went down to like a park in the city, you know, down a few blocks from their house or whatever. And she dropped this trinket over a bridge or into a ditch or something. They thought it was lost forever. They went home, and the trinket was on their back porch where the little girl plays with it. Because this crow had watched them play, had seen that this was important to the girl. They had started putting out food for the crow, and the crow would then bring things to offer them and leave it in this spot on the porch. So the crow apparently went with them to the park, noticed that the little girl dropped it, went and got it for her, flew back to the house and put it in that spot on the porch. Does that not blow your mind?
I've actually heard of how smart crows can be. So I have not heard something like that. And that is incredible, like that much.
It's crazy.
Yeah, it's crazy how smart crows are. I've heard some great stories about like how you can get rid of them, basically because they'll remember not to go to like a certain area and then kind of think like, hey, I shouldn't go here.
Yeah, if one of them dies in a certain area, they know that that is a dangerous spot and they all avoid it. Like they talk to each other like, hey, don't go there. And they don't. And they're incredibly smart and they're terrifying. And Nicolas Cage lives a goth lifestyle. And Nicolas Cage is a one of a kind. And he has a pet crow that calls him a jerk when he leaves the room. So we have covered President Biden's press conference, how Kanye West is going to save us from war in Russia, and Nicolas Cage's pet crow. And from all of those wonderful news stories, very important news stories, we're going to go to the country, the nation, the Democratic, what is it, the Democratic People? What is it?
Democratic People's Republic of Korea. Don't ever call it North Korea to somebody who is North Korean.
Will I get arrested for that, probably?
Oh, hands down. Especially since you're American.
Well, we're going to go to the Democratic People's Republic of Korea, a.k.a. North Korea. We mentioned on the last episode 25 when we had Joshua on that this is an area that he finds to be interesting, that he's done a lot of research into the world of North Korea, to their history, their dictators. And I thought that that would be an interesting thing because it's something that a lot of us in America don't know much about. We know that Trump called Kim Jong-un Rocket Man. We know facts here and there. We've seen the interview, and that's about it. So I thought we'd have Josh on. He would talk to us about North Korea, about North Korean history and propaganda. And so it's going to be a good time. Joshua, take it away.
Well, it's really interesting that you mentioned the interview. Most people have heard of it by now, that very controversial movie where two news reporters go to North Korea and end up killing Kim Jong-un. Right. That's actually what started my fascination with North Korea, because I had heard about it.
Oh, really?
But I didn't really know that much about it. And I was 14 when it came out. I was most definitely not allowed to watch it, and I think that just made it worse.
Be honest. Your dad's not listening to this. You watched it anyway.
No, I actually did because they would have seen where I watched it on Netflix. So I actually did wait until I got permission, believe it or not.
Anyway, you watched Seth Rogen and who was the other actor in there? James Franco. James Franco. So that movie came out. That's what sparked your interest in North Korea.
I'd heard about it a little bit, but that's what really sparked my interest. And I actually made one of my friends watch it a couple of weeks ago. And watching it again after knowing what I know about North Korea now, it's very interesting how many things they got right.
Wow.
It's actually fairly accurate to at least what I know about North Korea.
It's actually a pretty funny movie, too.
It is hilarious. It's just one of those that it's so stupid that it's funny.
Yeah, it's way over the top, but pretty funny.
So let me start out by asking you this. What do you know about North Korea?
I know that they have had trouble. They've had a lot of famines. I know Kim Jong-un and Kim Jong-il and the granddaddy's name I don't remember.
Kim Il-sung.
Kim Il-sung, yes. I know that they are pretty much a nuclear nation now. They have attained nuclear weapons. Actually, what made me want to have you on the show to talk about this is that I'm currently reading a book called Kim Jong-un and the Bomb. It is a massive book. I'm about halfway through, but it talks about North Korea's history, but only in regard to them trying to develop nuclear weapons and why they want to have them as a deterrent. So that made me interested, piqued my interest in the country. I know that they have diplomatic relationship to some extent with China, maybe a little bit with Russia, if I'm getting that right. But I know it's very authoritarian. It's a dictatorship 100%. And I know that not a lot of people in North Korea know very much about the rest of the world. They don't really have an idea of what's going on. They don't have access to internet or world news. But really, I guess that's about it. I think I pretty much know maybe a little bit more than the average person. But for folks that pay attention, I probably know about what most people in America do.
Yeah, you hit on pretty much most of the important points that people should know about North Korea. You talked about how it's so isolated from the rest of the world, and that it's partly because of the way that they control the people. So they limit the information that comes in so people don't know of the outside world. It's a lot of what was going on like with East and West Germany during that period. But yeah, North Korea is extremely isolated. They have this ideology called Juche, which means self-reliance. So it's just isolationism that's been seen in history before. It's just try to be as cut off from everybody as you can, be completely reliant on your own country. And they hammer that home with everybody. They teach the kids that.
Sounds a lot like Juicy. I could see Kim Jong-un with some of those sweatpants with Juicy across the butt. Except for it would say Juice or whatever. Juche. Yeah, that's what it would say.
So the whole self-reliance thing also kind of stems from they proclaim themselves to be a communist nation. Although if you read a history book, you will know that a communist nation, no matter what anybody has said, has never been created a true communist state. It's not possible because it requires a perfect world. But because of that, things are extremely controlled by the government. The government controls all aspects of production. To a degree, it's loosened a little bit in the last couple of years under Kim Jong-un. One of the big things that they focus on is their military. Like you were talking about, everybody, when you say North Korea, most people are going to know or think of North Korea and its nuclear weapons. So that stems from something called Sangun, which is a military first ideology. It's basically just, we need to have as strong of a military as possible. And
so in North Korea, don't they all, isn't military service mandatory?
It is. I believe it is only for males.
Okay.
Although women may, I think it's changed a little bit, but yes, with men, you, unless you go to college, so it's basically like how they used to dodge the draft a long time ago here in the United States. I think it's 15 years you have to spend in the military. Being in the North Korean military is absolutely awful. You're barely fed enough. You know, you always hear the jokes that soldiers here in the United States make about how terrible the MREs are. But in North Korea, there are many times that they will go hungry. They won't be fed enough. Their only option is to either try to grow their own food where they're stationed at or try and steal, which is what a lot of them do.
Wow.
The sad thing is, though, joining the military is one of the best prospects for the lower class North Koreans, which is the majority of North Koreans. That is actually the best job prospect for males. So they can try going to college, but it's not guaranteed that they're going to be able to get a job unless they have connections to the higher up or depending on where their family falls. So the military actually is the best option for a lot of the men or the young boys in North Korea.
Yeah, and I actually, it kind of makes me think about the Hunger Games. Just listening to you describe the difference between those that have and those that don't and the giant gap there and people not even being able to have food. You remember on the Hunger Games how like folks in the capital were so disconnected from all of the different areas across their country and how people were living in abject poverty, but then in the capital it was like affluence and it was opulence. And that's kind of, just listening to you talk, that's sort of what popped into my head when it came to like, you know, I'm sure Kim Jong-un and like his military leaders and his officials and folks that are building the bombs, like they probably have it pretty good while almost everybody else is pretty close to starving. Is that accurate in your assessment?
That is, and I actually really like that comparison you made to the Hunger Games and that divide. Like I remember between the capital and like District 12, the poorest district.
Yeah,
that actually is a really, really good representation of that. That I like that. That's a good comparison.
Could people like in America, could we, if I just decided that I wanted to go to North Korea and I could afford a flight out there, is that even something that you can do?
You could until 2018. Mike Pence, the vice president then, basically banned Americans from going to North Korea. So you won't be allowed to go.
That's too bad.
You could, and North Korea still will accept. They won't right now because of COVID, but they would accept. It was very rigorous, like everything you had to go through. If you missed one thing on your paperwork, you would likely be imprisoned. They would allow some foreign visitors. I think they would get maybe like 15 a year.
I remember that story a while back, and I'm sure you've heard this one, but there was that American kid. He may have even been a college kid, and I don't know why he was in North Korea, but he was there. and he thought it would be fun to take a poster.
It was a pamphlet.
It was a pamphlet.
It was a pamphlet of the three of like the three leaders: Kim Il Sung, Kim Jong Il, and Kim Jong Un.
Oh my gosh!
With like all their ideology, that's not supposed to leave the country.
I thought it was bad enough even being a poster, but a pamphlet just makes it that much more wacky. He took a pamphlet. He tried to take it home, and he got caught. And wasn't he imprisoned over there?
He was. I cannot remember if we managed to get him back or if he died there.
If I ever went to North Korea, I would follow every rule to the T. I'd be terrified to do anything.
There's actually a very interesting... So one of the things... Let me explain this first. One of the things that North Korea will not allow, one of the people, is they hate journalists. Mm. They don't even care if you're not going over there to do journalism. If you have been associated with journalism, you are going to get denied. And if they do let you in over there, they're probably going to imprison and kill you.
Well, as you know, I know you're sharing this because you're well aware that the internet has said that I am a journalist.
Don't go to North Korea, please. there's a really interesting, I want to say it was a Vice documentary, of these journalists that somehow managed to get approved to go to North Korea, and they recorded what they could without getting in trouble, and they got into a lot of trouble, but they made it back safely. But
Were they American journalists?
American journalists, believe it or not. Yeah, it blew my mind when I saw it. But yeah, like they went. So even when you go to North Korea, like if you go as a tourist, everything is controlled and you're not really going to see the true North Korea. You're going to see what they want you to see. Do you remember in the interview when James Franco's character finds all the fake grocery stores and he gets like all mad about it? That actually, that was one of the accurate things.
Wow.
They will take you by fake grocery stores with fake people planted there that look all happy. You are not allowed to take pictures of anything unless it's approved. Like if you want to, you're allowed to take pictures of like the statues of the Kim family, but you have to make sure you get the whole, you have to get all the statues. You can't just get half of it or you could be imprisoned.
Wow. That's crazy. Yeah, I had no idea. I remember that scene in the movie and I remember being like, how crazy is that? But that's a real thing.
That is a very real thing.
No kidding, man. So
coincidentally with that, there is the demilitarized zone. I don't know if you're aware of what that is.
That's the for those listening, that is that not like that's the sort of like the area right between North Korea and South Korea where it's like you can, if you're in that area, you're safe. Is that what it is?
Basically, it's where they decided. So up until very recently, technically North and South Korea were still at war.
Because North Korea refuses to officially ended. Is that right?
Right. And I think they have finally, I don't know if they haven't signed a treaty as far as I know, but they've moved closer towards officially ending the war. The DMZ is on the 38th parallel. It's the border between North and South Korea. And yeah, it's a period like it's weird because they say it's demilitarized, but there's still military on both sides.
Mm.
So yeah, you have the DMZ and there's kind of like a little, you can almost call it like a little mini war going on between North and South Korea on either side. There's places in South Korea where you can actually look across and see North Korea. And North Korea has actually built what they've called the Peace Village of King Jong-dong, which I probably didn't pronounce right.
I think you pronounced it wonderfully, and it sounds delightful.
It's basically a fake village that they created to try to lure South Koreans to come defect to North Korea. It is completely empty. There's no people in any of the buildings. There's not even glass in some of the windows.
Surely that doesn't fool anybody.
I can't imagine that it would, but nowadays you never know. I mean,
I've read stories. I've heard about North Koreans defecting and crossing the river to China or going to South Korea, trying to escape. And sometimes it's pretty dangerous. Do people ever defect to North Korea? Have you ever heard of that happening?
I have heard of two people. One was, I think, from Russia. And I honestly feel like there may have been an American that, for whatever reason, defected North Korea.
Like, I feel like maybe only if you were someone like Edward Snowden or somebody that just had very few options would be the only time that defecting to North Korea would ever be something you would consider.
Yeah, I just can't. I can't imagine that. Another one of the things they built is what's called the Ryugyong Hotel. And it was for a while like one of the biggest hotels that had ever been created. It's absolutely magnificent to look at. The architecture behind it, it's beautiful architecture. But it's all a facade. It looks pretty on the outside, but most of the rooms aren't even furnished, if there even are rooms. Wow. There have been some journalists that have been allowed to stay there, and they said it was one of the worst places they stayed. They said they were served food that seemed like it had just been left out to, like, just look pretty but not actually be something you could really eat. Everything North Korea does that the outside world sees is that, or that they intend the outside world to see, is all a show. It's all a facade, all to make it look like they're this thriving country that has plenty of food, when in reality most of the people are starving. There's countless human rights violations. It's all a facade.
Essentially, Kim Jong-un is very, very good at Instagram filters, is what I'm hearing.
His whole family's been like that. That's what the whole country was built off of. They went through a period. I can't remember if it was in the late 90s or early 2000s, and I'm hopefully going to get this right, that they called the Arduous Marches. And it was basically just a period where so many people began to starve because they couldn't grow enough food.
Mm.
And they do get aid from other countries, but the problem is they want to be the ones that give out the aid, so they don't really... They're not like, they waste a good portion of it, so people still go hungry even with the aid.
And I'm sure the officials who are handing out stuff, I'm sure it's like one for you, three for me, half for you, five for me. You know, I'm sure they're not dividing it out to those in need.
There is so much corruption that goes on in that country, which is kind of what you tend to see with poorer countries, is the poorer a country is, the worse the corruption is. Now, whether or not it's
right.
Poor or because it's corrupt, you know.
Or the at least the more in plain sight the corruption is. I think the richer countries just do a better job at hiding it.
Yeah, I think you could say that, because there is corruption in every country. But
ours is white collar corruption, whereas North Korea, it's on the ground floor.
Right. Like, it's clear oppression, clear. And I'm not saying that doesn't go on here, but it's just very obvious with North Korea.
If you were comparing North Korea to another regime in history, I mean, some of the things that you're describing to me, it's hard to make a comparison. It's hard to imagine people living under those conditions. I mean, what other regime or what other type of situation across the globe in our world's history would you even say is comparable to this?
Currently, I think North Korea is one of the worst. If I had to compare it to through like relatively recent history, I would say Stalin's Soviet Union.
Wow.
But I don't even think it's, I honestly think that we're getting to a point where North Korea might be worse. But it can be, there are a lot of mirrors between what goes on in North Korea now and what went on under Stalin in the Soviet Union. Executions for people deemed enemy of the state, people going hungry, a failed steel infrastructure, and just a failed regime. Just Stalin was one thing, but he was just, I know Soviet Union had many just horrible but yet extravagant leaders. I don't know if that's the right word for it, but just like these like cult of personality characters.
Yeah.
But the problem with North Korea is it's only ever had three leaders. It's had Kim Il-sung, Kim Jong-il, and Kim Jong-un. Because North Korea was only founded in 1945 when the Japanese were driven out of the Korean Peninsula. So it's only existed, it hasn't even existed 100 years. It's existed almost 80 years, I think.
In some ways, it's kind of, I'm not saying positive things about North Korea. Please do not cancel me, internet, over this statement. But it's kind of amazing in a way that they have made it even this long, considering the corruption, considering the lack of relationships and diplomacy with other nations, considering the fact that their people are constantly starving. It's kind of amazing they've even made it this long.
Yeah, one of the things that keeps them afloat is not actually their own country. It is China currently. While the Soviet Union was still, before it dissolved, the Soviet Union kept North Korea afloat. And then once the Soviet Union fell, there was a lot of panic in the higher ups in North Korea because they knew what that meant. And that was when things really, really started to go downhill.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. I could see that. That makes sense that the USSR would have been supporting North Korea.
It's one of those situations where there isn't a good answer, because obviously what's going on now is horrible. But there's a pretty good chance that if the regime collapses, it's going to get even worse for the people that live there.
And do you think, so I, I know that, like, people that live there don't have a choice when it comes to their support of the government. They don't have any say-so. They don't have any freedom, let alone freedom of speech or freedom to criticize the regime. But do you think that people who actually live there, are they putting on an act, and is their support of Kim Jong-un just for show because they don't have a choice? Or do you kind of get the sense in studying this stuff that a lot of people that live there actually buy into the propaganda and think that things are going well and that they live in the greatest nation on the planet?
You know, when it comes to anything like this, this is, again, something very similar to the Soviet Union, the whole idea of how strong the Soviets were, that everything was fine. There's always going to be people that are going to believe it. There are a good majority of people that believe it in North Korea, believe everything that they're told. But a lot of what's happening now is it's mostly the older generations that still buy into it. And a lot of the younger generations are kind of waking up like, you know, this isn't right. This doesn't make any sense.
They just don't have a lot of options.
Right. You have to fake it or you're going to be killed. You cannot stand up for it. Your only option to get away from it is to defect. And if you are caught defecting, you will be killed, or you'll either be imprisoned in they don't call it a prison. They call it a sentence of hard labor, which means going to a prison camp, basically a concentration camp. But they have this really messed up thing called the three generation rule. I don't know if you've heard of that before.
I have not.
So basically, let's say that you were a North Korean and you tried to defect and you were caught. Your whole family would be sent to prison. Your mother and father would be sent to prison, and your grandparents would be sent to prison. Three generations.
Wow.
So it's a deterrent to keep people from defecting, because even if they defect, they know, like, if it's discovered that they defected, their family is going to go most likely die in a prison camp.
Yeah, it's one thing to make a decision for yourself, but if you know Meemaw has to be sentenced to hard labor, it's a whole nother ballgame. I would never do that to my Meemaw.
Right, and that's what happens to a lot of people. They're stuck there because you don't want to do that to your family. You just couldn't. I know I couldn't if it was me in that situation. I'd just have to deal with it.
For sure.
So basically in North Korea, talking about like the things that can get you imprisoned, smuggling in outside, like whether it's Western media or South Korean media, South Korean media is absolutely loved by the lower class, the North Korean people, and really, I guess, most of the people who aren't in government.
Like K-pop?
Whether it be K-pop or South Korean TV shows, I am sure that you are familiar, and I'm sure that everybody that has ever or that currently exists is aware of what Squid Game is.
Yes.
Everybody's heard of it. There is a man named John Luigia, I hope I said his name right, who was executed for smuggling in copies of Squid Game into North Korea because it was a South Korean show, and they executed him for that. I think he was a college student, just trying to make some extra money, and they executed him for it. They executed him by firing squad. Problem is they don't want people to see what's going on in the outside world and think, hey, I want this, and think, hey, maybe I want to defect. Gotcha. It's all about controlling the information.
You
mentioned the interview a little while ago. Around that time, I don't know if you remember, Sony like movie and media branch or division or whatever got hacked.
I do remember.
And I think even President Obama came out and said, like, I think he said don't release the movie. I could be incorrect about that. But they decided not to release the movie, and that's why they put it straight on Netflix instead of showing it in theaters. And it's pretty much everything but confirmed that it was North Korea. Everybody knows it was North Korea. All Korea started doing was they were putting the movie on flash drives, and they were floating them over the DMZ on balloons so that people could get them in North Korea.
Oh, that's too funny.
And
I'm sure that did not make Kim Jong-un very happy.
South Korea has done stuff like that before. They floated balloons that make Kim Jong-un look like a fat baby, like in a diaper and everything, crying. They'll blast music, and it goes both ways. Like, North Korea will send stuff from their country over to South Korea to try to get people to come over. Their propaganda is, you know, some of it seems like it could maybe be effective, but then there's some of it, like, in North Korea, they say that because they're the most perfect country in the world that was appointed by a god, that unicorns exist in North Korea.
Word, unicorns.
That would be pretty cool if they existed there, but
do we know that they do not?
You know, we don't know that. For all we know, they could.
Okay.
You can't really get into North Korea, so nobody can go in and look.
That's where Bigfoot is, too. He's in North Korea riding a unicorn.
And the thing I said about, like, that it was basically God appointed, that's who appointed the leaders. They believe that the leaders are like a god or are their god.
So Kim Jong-un is a deity in his country.
Yes. Wow. They claim that he climbed Mount Paektu, I think that's how you pronounce it, the highest mountain in North Korea. It's a really beautiful mountain, and they're very proud of their they're very proud of it. They say that Kim Jong-un climbed up that mountain in a long coat and with dress shoes on. Climbed to the top.
What a weird, I mean, some of the propaganda is pretty funny because it's just a bizarre claim to even make. Like, that's just a bizarre claim to make. He climbed up this tallest mountain in our country in dress shoes.
So his father, Kim Jong-il, liked to write a lot. And he would write, like, accounts of just different things about his life. And somebody managed to actually sneak them out of North Korea and put together a book that was a collection of Kim Jong-il's writings, and I've read some of them. And the one that stands out,
I've got to get that. That's on my list now, my reading list.
I will find it and send you the link. It's on Amazon.
Please.
The one thing that I remember standing out, because I used this in a paper that I was writing about North Korea, was Kim Jong-un said that when he was born in a little shed on the top of that mountain. His father, Kim Il-sung, was too busy doing North Korean dictatorship stuff to even be there, but that once he was born, he came out, didn't cry, eyes wide open, rainbows lit up the sky, and the flowers began to sing. And I am not even making this up.
The flowers began to sing.
Yes.
Like, literally, like, yes. Good for you, you look happy and healthy, but not me. Like, probably not that song, but the rainbow, he came out, eyes wide open, did not cry, rainbows filled the sky, and the flowers began to sing. So Kim Jong-un allegedly was born in a shed.
Kim Jong-il. Kim Jong-un, it's very...
Oh, this is Un's daddy.
This is Un's father, correct.
Okay, his dad was born in a shed. Yeah, that's a good tie-in to the show. Kim Jong-il was born in the shed, and we're on in the shed. A different shed, thankfully.
We went full circle. It all led up to this moment.
I love it. I love it.
But yeah, it's stuff like that. Like, they have some of the weirdest things that they claim. They claim that Kim Il-sung, so Kim Jong-un's grandfather, played a perfect game of 18-hole golf, so got a hole-in-one every single time.
18 hole-in-ones. That's impressive.
I think it was Kim Jong-il that North Korea said was voted sexiest man alive. Which I don't know if you've ever seen him or seen a picture of him before he died.
I don't think so. I can't recall what he looks like. Pretty sexy?
No. I can't even... no. That reminds me of a really interesting fact about him, though, with the whole propaganda thing that they try to, like, portray everything as everybody working together. And Kim Jong-il really, really pushed that. So this was Kim Jong-un's father, really, really pushed that. Despite being the leader, he always walked around... became iconic with him of having like this green work suit on to kind of make him look less like a higher up and look more like the people, to make the people feel like he actually cared about them.
He's a man of the people.
Basically, yeah. And like, he would go and go to factories and do these like inspections and basically just look at everything and go see the people and hug the children and pretend like he was this great figure, despite the fact that his people were starving. He was spending a good bit of the money, or they already did spend large majority of the GDP on the military, but then they even increased it when they started trying to develop nuclear weapons.
Yep.
Yeah, it's like I said earlier, it is all just a show that they put on. And
it's just smoke and mirrors, all of it.
They have even, like, during some of those times of where people were really going hungry, Kim Jong-un happened to lose weight, and a lot of people have been saying that it was actually to make him appear more relatable to the people and make it look like he was suffering along with the people, despite the fact that Kim Jong-un is obviously never, ever going to go hungry.
Yep.
Fun fact about Kim Jong-un, I don't know if you remember from all the times that you and me used to hang out, but anybody that knows me knows how much that I love cheese, correct?
Yeah, cheese.
Kim Jong-un is also apparently a cheese aficionado.
Oh, boy.
He spent time, this is one of those random facts I know, when he went to school in Switzerland under the name Pak Un or Un Pak, and...
That sounds too much like Tupac for my taste.
and he discovered a love for Emmental cheese. And he's
is that one of the fancy stinky cheeses?
I guess it is. I just know that he loves it a lot.
Yeah, that's kind of weird that he went to school in Switzerland. They must not have known. Do you think they got him in school over there under this name and they really did not know who he was?
Most likely. A lot of the reports say that people knew that he was the son of some leader or of somebody very important, but it wasn't known that he was the son of Kim Jong-il. And it wasn't actually until right before Kim Jong-il's death that anybody really even knew who Kim Jong-un was.
Right.
So they kept him out of the spotlight for a long time and then just, hey, here's our new leader that you know nothing about, which was done intentionally.
So it's not like he was the heir apparent his whole life and everyone knew who he was and knew that he would take over the throne when his daddy died. That wasn't it at all.
Interesting story about that. So Kim Jong-un actually had a half-brother, Kim Jong-nam, that was his name. And he was at one point supposed to take over after his father died or stepped down, but he fell out of favor when he said that he wanted to really try and take care of the people. And
imagine that.
North Korea actually might have been in a better condition today if he had been the one that took over. But then he got in a lot of trouble with his family when he got caught with a fake visa trying to go to Disney World in Tokyo.
Oh, boy.
Now, then they ended up just putting Kim Jong-un as the top or as the new leader. And then it was, I want to say it was 2019. Kim Jong-nam was at an airport and he was assassinated by these two women with some type of poison that they put on his face.
They poisoned the half-brother at a airport in a different country?
They did.
Yo, that takes a lot of guts to do something like that. That's crazy.
I can't remember where the women were from. I want to say they were from Indonesia, but I could be wrong. But basically, North Korean officials went to them and told them they were going to be filming this prank TV show, like the pranks you see on YouTube. And they went through this whole process of having them do all this stuff and then like, hey, you're going to prank this guy, go put this stuff on his face. It's just going to smell bad. But in reality, it was poison and he died soon after.
Wow. Yeah. So no doubt Kim Jong-un had that done so that there would not be somebody to challenge the throne.
And it would not be the first time that he's done that. It's unconfirmed, but there are reports and those who heavily believe that he had his uncle executed by feeding him to a pack of wild rabid hungry dogs.
Dogs that were just like feral and starving.
Then they basically round up in a cage and threw him in.
Wow. Yeah, and I remember too, there was this was a few years back, but rumors for a couple weeks that maybe Kim Jong-un either had died or about to die. And so there's a lot of talk on news stations about if he did, who would follow. I don't know if Kim Jong-un has kids, but at the time the only person I remember them talking about was his sister or something.
It was either his sister or his wife, yeah.
Okay. Does he have children?
Not that anybody knows of, although, and we'll get to that a little bit later, he most likely does have children that we just don't know about. But yeah, as of right now, it's kind of unclear who will step up to the leader next once Kim Jong-un is gone.
He probably has like a son in Indiana. That's just like random, just some kid in Indiana. My dad and my mama always told me, your dad's Kim Jong-un. And that would make a good movie. That would be a sequel. I guess it couldn't be a sequel to The Interview, because didn't they successfully kill Kim Jong-un in that movie?
They did. They blew him up while Firework was playing in the background. It was glorious.
That's right. Okay, so not a sequel, but a different idea for a movie. Pitch this to somebody. Kim Jong-un has a son that lives in Indiana, and when Kim Jong-un is on his deathbed, he finds out, I am his son, and he's taking to North Korea and prepared to take the throne. That'd be a good movie, I think.
You know, I would watch it.
I would, too. So, Joshua, do you have I know that you've got a game prepared that you would like to do with us. Are there any more unique things about North Korea or their propaganda that you'd like to share first?
So I will just run over some last few things that I had written down. So
absolutely.
North Korea claims that the winners of their elections get 100% of the vote. And it's technically not false. The only problem is the elections just aren't open to the public. Or there will only be
they don't have a choice.
Right.
That's
so
right.
So it's not a fair election. Going back to what we were talking about the little conflict between North and South Korea sending stuff back over the DMZ. At one point, South Korea, on their side of the DMZ, erected a very tall flagpole. North Korea then went and erected an even taller flagpole. South Korea responded with an even taller flagpole, and they kept doing that for a good while. And then they called it like the flagpole wars. It's basically just like seeing who could put up the higher flagpole. And for a while, I think North Korea actually held the world record for the tallest flagpole in existence.
I think they need video games, maybe.
They do actually hold the record for the largest stadium in existence.
Really?
The First of May Stadium, I believe. It can hold, without like any people sitting on the ground, it can hold 114,000 people.
Wow.
Yeah, they have the largest stadium in the world, and yet they do this thing called the Peace Festival sometimes, but it usually doesn't fill up. But it's interesting that a country that's one of the poorest in the world has the largest stadium.
Yeah, I don't think the World Cup's going to Democratic People's Republic of North Korea anytime soon.
I highly doubt that. So, would you like to play a game?
I would like to play a game.
Would you like to play DAP or CAP, assuming I said it right?
You said it backwards, but you said the right words. I'm proud of that.
Would you like to play CAP or DAP?
Yeah, so CAP or DAP, if this is your first time listening to this show, is a game that we always play when we have a guest on. We played it with Joshua last time, where you run through 10 questions and you either say cap, meaning that I think that is false, I don't agree, that can't be true, or dap, as in I agree, I think this is true. So you have prepared cap or dap North Korean style.
I have. We'll see. We'll put some propaganda in there that I haven't mentioned, and we'll see what you can see what you think about it.
Okay, so you're going to read off a piece of North Korean propaganda. And it may or may not be true. And if it is true, if I think it's true, I will say DAP. If I think it's false, I will say CAP. Is that how we're doing this?
Correct. It's not just all propaganda. There's just some weird facts.
I'm ready. Hit me with
it. All right. So Kim Il-sung, the grandfather of Kim Jong-un, led the Korean army to drive off the Japanese and founded North Korea in 1945. Is that CAP or DAP?
Okay, so you did say that they have existed since 1945, and right. If he became the supreme leader, I'm guessing that he had to have some type of sway with the people initially, so I'm going to go with DAP.
That is CAP. North Korea was not actually founded by Kim Il-sung, despite the story that they tell the people and try to tell everyone else. Joseph Stalin of the Soviet Union, who we already mentioned, founded North Korea or didn't really found North Korea, but he instilled the Kim family in North Korea, and the Soviet Union were the ones that drove out the Japanese and made the Japanese army surrender, and the Soviet troops occupied Northern Korea.
Essentially, I'm 0 for 1 is what you're saying.
Essentially, you're 0 for 1.
You know what, though? Now that you're saying that, I totally should have gotten that right, because that was in the first chapter of the book that I've read. It just has taken me so long to read it that was several weeks ago, and I have forgotten it. But yes, I'm 0 for 1. All right, hit me with another one. I'll get this one maybe.
Question 2, CAP or DAP? There are 28 state-approved hairstyles in North Korea.
Okay, so I am tempted to say DAP, because I do recall reading a headline a year or two ago about approved hairstyles. So I believe that might be a thing. What's tripping me up is the number 28. Is that just a number you threw in to throw me off? I'm gonna say DAP, that is true.
That is true. This was as of 2019. So it may have changed now, but it's kind of hard to get the information out there. But yes, there are only 28 state-approved hairstyles, even fewer for women. This is just for men, too.
28 for men.
Correct.
Wow. Is the mullet one of them?
No, that has actually been banned in North Korea.
I think maybe I talked about that on the episode one time.
That was just a couple of months ago. Technically last year, but...
That's crazy. Okay, well, hey, I'm one for two. I got one right.
Number 3, CAP or DAP? Marijuana is legal in North Korea.
That's got to be CAP. I don't believe that.
That is DAP. It is... a lot of the soldiers love to smoke marijuana. You can actually find marijuana in most stores in North Korea.
In North Korea, one of the strictest places in the entire world, you're allowed to legally smoke weed.
I think that they believe that it was actually given to them by Kim Il-sung. I know that it was like some God figure that they said gave it to them. And they have like a different name for it.
That's just wild to me, because in America, we're not even, you know, we got a few states, but most places you still can't legally do that. So that's kind of incredible.
So question four, cap or dap? Jong-il, the father of Kim Jong-un, invented the hamburger.
Okay, there is no way, there's no way that he actually invented the hamburger. But I do believe that people in North Korea might believe that. So I don't know whether to answer cap. I'm going to say cap because in reality, in the real world, I know that it did not come from North Korea, the hamburger. I think it came from Hamburg, Germany, or somewhere in Germany. So I'm going to say cap.
You are correct. It is cap. Although, like you said, they claim that Kim Jong-il invented the hamburger. And there are a couple of burger restaurants in North Korea.
That's so interesting.
It's basically
because
just like
they hate all type of anything from the States. Anything that seems American, they don't even allow it to be there, but they embrace the hamburger.
It's one of those weird things about North Korea.
All right, well, give me another one. I'm on a streak now.
Number five, despite the state's anti-Western attitude, Kim Jong-un enjoys many Western things, such as some Western TV shows, the sport of basketball, and he is even friends with former NBA star Dennis Rodman.
Okay, I know this one 100% true. This is dap, because I remember Rodman is taking at least a couple trips. And one time he actually took a bunch of NBA players, former NBA players, to North Korea to play with Kim Jong-un. I don't remember where I first heard that, but I know Kim Jong-un idolized the Chicago Bulls back when they had Dennis Rodman and Michael Jordan in the 90s, and Dennis Rodman was his favorite player, so I'm going to say dap.
That is true. You are correct. They are actually really good friends, and Dennis Rodman has done some interviews talking about his time with Kim Jong-un, and it's just a weird situation. I'm happy for them. I'm glad Kim Jong-un has hopefully a good influence on him. I'm sorry. Let me rephrase that. I forgot Kim Jong-un. Let's edit that out.
That's where we get canceled. They're coming for
okay.
you.
That Kim you Jong-un think, has somebody that's putting a good influence on him.
You think so low of my man Dennis Rodman that you say Kim Jong-un would be a good influence on him. That's incredible. Oh, that's funny. That's classic. We can't edit that out. That's the best part so far. I've got two in a row, three right overall. Hit me with another one.
So whatever number this is, 20% of North Korea's gross domestic product, or GDP, is spent on Kim Jong-un's thoroughbred horse collection. Cap or dap?
That sounds like something he would do, but I'm going to say cap.
That is dap. That is actually correct.
Really?
He spends 20% of the country's GDP on thoroughbred horses, and 35% goes to the military. So that's 55% that doesn't go to the people.
55% of the entire nation's GDP is spent on the military and his horse collection.
Unfortunately.
Maybe he really does have unicorns.
Maybe that's what he's spending the money on. Maybe they weren't developing boots after all. They were just developing unicorns.
Wouldn't that be lovely? If I ever meet Dennis Rodman, that's what I'm going to ask him. I'm going to be like, hey, Dennis, be honest. They got unicorns or nah?
You know, we'll probably never get to go, so we'll never get to find out.
Question seven, I think.
Cap or dap? One of the main reasons the living and economic condition is so bad is because of the sanctions placed on North Korea by the United States.
That's got to be dap.
You think that's true?
Yeah.
You just fell for North Korea's propaganda. That is not true. North Korea was already suffering before the United States sanctions, and they have always blamed the United States for pretty much all of their problems.
I just assumed. I knew there were sanctions, so I assumed that, yeah.
These sanctions certainly don't help, but they are not the cause of the problem.
I think that clip of you saying to me, you just fell for North Korean propaganda, will probably echo in my mind for the next couple of days. I didn't anticipate that when I brought you on the show, but it's all in good fun. I've gotten three right, I think, out of like seven. Are we on question eight? Is that where we're at?
We have this one and then one more, so I think so.
Okay.
So this one, think really hard about this one.
Okay.
Just think about what we've talked about and how isolated North Korea is.
You're trying to give me helpful hints because I'm doing so poorly.
As of April 1st, 2020, North Korea had zero reported COVID cases, cap or dap.
See, this is so hard. This game, Josh, that you have made is so hard, because the thing is, is I could see where it's possible that they didn't, because they are so closed off. And right. they are a dictatorship, where I could see where, like, Kim Jong-un would just say, nobody's leaving, nobody's coming in, and maybe. But I also just read yesterday how this one Pacific Island nation that nobody has entered and nobody has left since the pandemic started just got their first case of COVID. I'm gonna go on a limb. I'm gonna say DAP.
You think that is true?
I think it's true.
You have once again fallen for North Carolina.
Oh,
I said reported cases. They have reported that they had no cases. They claimed that there was this mysterious pollen, I think, there was this yellow fog that was making people sick. It's very obvious that COVID would have gotten in, and it has absolutely crippled the country further.
Joshua.
But they claim that they have not had any cases.
Joshua, you are really harming my self-esteem tonight.
I wouldn't say it should harm your self-esteem. That just shows that's how good they are at their propaganda games.
I'm susceptible to dictatorship, and I didn't even realize it. I didn't. Whew, okay, I've fallen for it twice. I've gotten three correct, and we're now on our last question. Is that right?
I saved the best for last. And this one will be a question that hopefully you will know, because it involves me and North Korea.
Uh-oh.
So I, Joshua Teasley, have met someone who has been to North Korea. Cap or DAP?
You've never met Dennis Rodman. I know that for sure. Okay, this is where I'm going with this one. This is my thought process. I'm just going to lay it out there for you. You are a college student at University of Alabama, Birmingham. And something I know about that campus is that they have a tremendous amount of international students.
This is very true. I've made some really cool friends.
So what I'm going to say is that you have met someone on your college campus that is from South Korea that has spent some minute amount of time across the border in North Korea. So I'm going to say DAP.
You are correct, but your reasoning for it is actually incorrect. But we'll still give it to you.
Okay, so share the story. How did you meet someone that has been to North Korea? Was it Dennis Rodman?
It was not Dennis Rodman. In fact, it was Ric Flair.
The wrestler? So,
the wrestler, and as well as the old WCW manager, Eric Bischoff. I'm pretty sure he went too. So you remember how I mentioned the Peace Festival in the Giant Stadium earlier?
Yeah.
I don't know how exactly it happened, but somehow, do you remember old school WCW World Championship Wrestling?
Absolutely.
So WCW and then New Japan Pro Wrestling kind of teamed up and went to North Korea to have a pay-per-view streamed from North Korea called Collision in Korea.
And it was in North Korea, not South Korea.
It was in
Korea.
North Korea, in that stadium. And the main event of the second night, I can't remember who Ric Flair fought, but he lost.
Kim Jong-un? Was it Kim Jong-un?
I wish. I really wish. But yes, Ric Flair performed in North Korea. And back in April of 2017, I got to meet Ric Flair and get a picture with him.
Wow.
So I have met somebody that has been to North Korea.
Did you ask him about his time in North Korea?
I didn't know he had been there yet, or I would have.
Oh, and honestly, man, missed opportunity.
Kind of being Ric Flair and didn't really care about us, he was kind of drunk too, which kind of made the whole experience cooler.
Yeah. He was kind of in a different world, huh?
But yes, I have met one, probably two people that have been to North Korea.
Wow. That's crazy. So I got 4 out of 10, 40%, which is a failing grade. And I fell for two pieces of North Korean propaganda. So I guess I did not fare too well on your quiz.
That's what they're meant to do. That's what the propaganda is meant to do. It's meant to trick people. I wouldn't take it too personally.
It was fun, though. That was a good idea. I'm glad that you did that. And it's super interesting to learn about North Korea, something that we really don't know much about over here in the States. The average person doesn't anyway. And the book that I'm reading about their hunt for nuclear weapons is it's been fairly interesting, too. It's a slow read. It's a very, very big book. I'm a pretty quick reader, but it's taken me a while to get through it. Kind of my closing thought on North Korea is just how unfortunate and how sad it is for the people that live there. It's fun to kind of laugh at some of the silly claims that their government makes, but at the same time, there are real people who are living there under abject poverty and oppression. They don't have food to eat, and they don't have any of the freedoms that we take for granted. So, that's something we haven't, we've talked about kind of how hard it is, but when you think about the fact that it's real people, it's pretty heartbreaking.
Absolutely. That is one of the easiest things to do, is not just with North Korea, with any any country where the situation is bad. That's one of the things I've learned studying history, is that there are still real people behind this that experience this or have experienced this. And it's really easy for us in our position in the United States or wherever in a good country to just kind of write it off and not think much about it, because, you know, we don't have to deal with it. But there's still real people just like you and me that have to go through this. And it's not right.
That's right.
It needs to change.
Yeah. And I hope we live to see it happen. I really do. I hope that we live to see normalization when it comes to interaction with the rest of the world, and, you know, some type of way that the folks there can experience freedom. Don't want to go to war with North Korea, but sure would love for their people to experience freedom.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you so much for sharing with us about that, Joshua. That was super interesting to me. I learned a lot. I think it was a good conversation, and it's something that's going to be very beneficial to our listener base.
Thank you for having me to talk about it. I enjoy talking about this. It's a very fascinating subject.
Absolutely. Well, do you want to hang around with us and talk some sports and paranormal news as well?
Absolutely. I love paranormal stuff, and I'm sure my answer about sports will be the same. Go sports. But I am more than willing to listen.
Awesome. Well, let's switch from this, from the world of politics to the world of sports, and let's hit the headlines. Nets Harden ready to go after hamstring injury. Steelers GM Colbert stepping down after draft. Draymond Green joins TNT crew as active player. Former offensive coordinator Mike Bobo returns to Georgia as offensive analyst. Oklahoma State hires Derek Mason as defensive coordinator. Chris Mack out at Louisville. Tom Crean not fretting his status with Georgia in last place in the SEC. Auburn survives scare in first game as number one ranked team. And a grateful Ben Roethlisberger retires after 18 years in the league. First in the world of sports, let's talk a little bit of college basketball. This is what the top 10 looks like in the game right now. Number one is the Auburn Tigers. Number two, Gonzaga. Number three, Arizona. Number four, Baylor. Number five, Kansas. Number six, Purdue. Number seven, Houston. Number eight, UCLA. Number nine, Duke. And number 10, Michigan State. Joshua, you are a UAB student and an Alabama Crimson Tide fan. Have you gotten to go to a UAB basketball game yet?
I was going to go to one that was last night, and I completely forgot about it because I was doing schoolwork. So I have not had a chance to go to one yet.
I went to a UAB game several years ago. It was a lot of fun. I don't know how they're doing. I don't know if they're having a good season or not. Alabama's been kind of up and down. They roster that looked pretty good, but then they've been losing some games as of late. I think they're like 11-7 or 12-7 on the year. Have you been able to check them out at all?
I have not. I've only kept up with UAB as I can. I'm an Alabama football fan. I used to go to some of the basketball games when I was younger, but I'm not. I don't like basketball as much as football. So I don't really keep up with basketball too much.
See, right now, that's kind of how what you just said sort of speaks towards most Alabama fans, I think, because they have been so dominant in football. Whereas for us Auburn fans, the shoe is on the other foot. Let's take you around the SEC. There are four teams in the SEC who are ranked in the top 25 in the country right now. Of course, we already said Auburn is number one. They're 19-1 on the season and 8-0 in the SEC. Kentucky is ranked number 12th. They're 16-4, 6-2 in the SEC. Tennessee is ranked number 18 in the country at 14-5 and 5-3 in the SEC. And LSU is ranked 19th overall at 16-4 and 4-4 in the SEC. At the beginning of the year, I gave you three teams to keep an eye on in the world of college basketball. Three teams I thought would have a very good season and would do very well and go far in March when it comes to the tournament. Those three teams were the Auburn Tigers, the Iona Gaels, and St. Bonaventure. So I gave you those three teams before the season started, and now Auburn is ranked number one with their only loss coming in double overtime to Connecticut. Iona is 17-3 overall, and St. Bonaventure is 11-5. So I would say that we are doing pretty well when it comes to our predictions in the world of college basketball. And I got to talk a little bit about my Auburn Tigers. This is the first time in school history that Auburn is ranked number one in the country when it comes to basketball. Auburn has so much talent. They've got the best defensive player in the country in their center, Kessler. They have the guy that's going to be the number one draft pick in the NBA this next year in Jabari Smith. They've got transfers that have come in that are playing lights out, returning players and role players and youth. And they've got experience. And it's been incredible as an Auburn fan. Never did I think that Auburn would be one of the top teams when it came to basketball across the country. For most of my time growing up watching Auburn basketball, they were one of the worst teams in the SEC. And when it comes to big conferences, Power Five conferences, Auburn was really one of the worst basketball schools that there was. Along with TCU, I think they were the two worst. There are two programs in Power Five conferences that were in the worst shape. And then came along Bruce Pearl. Bruce Pearl, who some schools didn't want to touch because he had gotten in trouble, minor infractions with the NCAA, and then got a show cause penalty for that. And Auburn took a chance on him when nobody else wanted to. And I think because of that, he's loved Auburn. He's had a good time at Auburn. He's completely turned things around and built a powerhouse when it comes to basketball in a state like Alabama where football reigns supreme. And Auburn is so deep and is so good. They play 10, 11 players. And even this last week, their first game in school history ranked number one. They played a Missouri team that was fired up, that was ready to take them out. And they played terribly. They played on the road against Missouri. Their best player scored 5 points. They couldn't hit a three-point shot. They missed a bunch of free throws. And yet they still won the game by a point. And that's where we are with Auburn basketball. We're to the point now that they can have a terrible game. They can be on the road. Their best player can score 5 points, and they can still find a way to win. And it's just something that is hard to put into words as an Auburn fan. And so this week when Chris Mack was fired at Louisville, you started seeing Auburn's coach Bruce Pearl connected to that job, that he was going to take the job, that he was interested in the job, that Louisville had contacted him and reached out. And you could just feel the anxiety online for Auburn fans. This is what always happens. This is what it means to be an Auburn fan. Every time something looks like it's going well, the sky falls. Like, we've got Chicken Little syndrome. And then tonight I saw a report that Bruce Pearl had decided to stay at Auburn, had signed a big contract extension. I haven't seen details on that. I imagine it makes him a very, very wealthy man, not that he wasn't already. And it's just going to be fun. It's going to be fun to see what happens the rest of the season, to see if Auburn can hold on in the SEC, if they can win the conference tournament, how far they go in March. They've already been to the Final Four once with Bruce Pearl at the helm. And they play an Oklahoma team this Saturday. They play an Oklahoma team that has a great coach, that has a lot of talent on that roster that will test them. And I'm so glad that Bruce Pearl stayed at Auburn. Auburn is one of the teams that we gave you, and they are living up to the hype. That is for sure. Are you sick of your stomach after all that Auburn talk?
You know, it's basketball, so I don't really mind. I'm only gonna say this one time. And I hope you don't think that I hate you for this, but I just think back to the Iron Bowl. Even though that was football, I think back to that, and that was good enough for me.
So close.
So close, yeah. In actuality, so that was such a good game. That's one of the best games I've watched in a while.
That game was intense. I mean, it was intense.
Historic, too.
It's okay. I could just edit that part out of the show if you want to. From college basketball, we switched to the world of the NFL. And the NFL is in the middle of the playoffs right now. We're headed towards the Super Bowl. Sunday are the two games that will decide who plays in the Super Bowl. And here on In the Shed, we got all of our first round playoff picks correct. We correctly picked the winning teams, except for one little slip up where we said that the Raiders would defeat the Bengals. Of course, that did not happen. And now both of our Super Bowl picks, both teams that we thought would make it to the Super Bowl, are out. The Raiders, of course, lost to the Bengals. And I put a lot of faith in Aaron Rodgers and the Packers. I thought that they were the best team headed into the playoffs. Aaron Rodgers has had an MVP-type season. He's been playing lights out. Their defense has looked better. And then they went out and lost at home to the 49ers. So a couple of storylines that came from the NFL playoffs so far that I want to highlight for you guys. The first is Brady's out, but he's not done. Tom Brady lost, his team lost, and it's so easy when someone who is 44 years old and is a quarterback in the NFL, when his team loses, it's so easy to assume that he's going to retire, to think that his career is done, that he will never challenge for another Super Bowl. And I'm here to tell you, not so fast. Not so fast. Yes, Tom Brady is 44 years old, but he actually had a very good season. He played well. And in this playoff game in which the Buccaneers lost to the Rams, they were actually down by like 27 points. and they came back and tied it up, then lost on a late field goal. They came so close to winning that game. And not only were they missing basically their entire receiving core outside of Mike Evans, but they were also missing a starting left tackle or left guard. I forget which it is. They're missing a couple of key defensive players. They had a lot of guys out to injury, and they had pulled some guys off the practice squad for Tom Brady to throw to. And they really had trouble on the offensive line with guys hurt and out and slowed by injuries. I don't think that this is a referendum on Tom Brady's career or on their season or on their future. I think that the Buccaneers can reload for next year, that they have just as good a chance to be in the playoffs as any other team. And once you get to the playoffs, you have a shot. So not so fast to all of you that are writing off Tom Brady. Have you not learned your lesson yet? Tom Brady is out, but he's not done. And you know, Josh, I have to say that. I have to have that opinion because Tom Brady is 44. And, you know, I'm 32, and I gotta believe that there's a future out there for me to be able to do things, you know?
You know, I think if you can do anything you put your mind to, so.
Anything that the North Korean government tricks me into anyway.
That too.
The other storyline that I want to highlight is Aaron Rodgers disappoints again. Aaron Rodgers, who people are quick to say is the most talented quarterback in the NFL, if not NFL history. They put him up there in the pantheon with all of these other Hall of Fame great quarterbacks. And yet here we are again with him hosting a playoff game, a 13-win team, and they lose in the first round of the playoffs. And this is a season where you can't say they had a terrible defense or that they didn't have a running game or he didn't have weapons. They had all of that. They had all of those things. They have a head coach that he works well with, that he fits. He's playing great. But then the playoff game comes, and he disappoints. He doesn't throw a touchdown pass. He lets the 49ers hang around. He's inefficient. He's not his typical self. And I think what it does is it cements the fact that he will never be the greatest quarterback in Packers history. That will remain Brett Favre. Aaron Rodgers is one of those players that people are actually going to look at his career. If he doesn't win anymore, they're going to look at a career where he has MVPs, where he has a Super Bowl, and they're going to say, I think he probably should have done more. I think he should have accomplished more. And I think this loss has to rest on the shoulders of Aaron Rodgers because the defense played well enough to win, because the GM has put tools around him to make him successful. But when the chips were in the middle of the table, he just couldn't get the job done. So once again, Aaron Rodgers, who I had a lot of faith in, actually disappoints when it comes to the playoffs. The last thing that I want to highlight was the epic game that was the Bills versus the Chiefs. This game went back and forth between both offenses scoring. Neither defense could stop them. Patrick Mahomes played really, really well. And so did Josh Allen. Josh Allen, who has been terrible in the playoffs, he actually lit it up. In some ways, he may have outperformed Patrick Mahomes, except that Patrick Mahomes had the ball last. And the game went into overtime. Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs got the ball. They went down the field. They scored a touchdown. They won. And because they won, I've heard a lot of people whining, a lot of people crying, a lot of people saying the NFL overtime rule should be changed because it's not like college football where both teams get the ball and have a chance. It's where if one team scores a touchdown, the game is over. And the thing is, they're saying that Josh Allen didn't have a chance. It's not fair. And I'm kind of tired of hearing that because to me, that logic doesn't hold up. No, Josh Allen did not have a chance, but Josh Allen's team had a chance. And football is a team sport. Yes, the Chiefs got the ball first, but if the Bengals had held them to a field goal or had stopped them from scoring, then Josh Allen would have had the ball in his hands with a chance to win the game. The defense needed one stop. They couldn't get it. In regulation, they needed to stop the Chiefs from getting in field goal range in 13 seconds, and they couldn't do it. They gave up over 45 yards on two plays in 13 seconds. So they deserve to lose. And there's nothing wrong with the overtime rule in the NFL. It's cutthroat, just like the NFL playoffs. So that was an epic game, but the rule is fine. And because of the first round of the playoffs, we now have the Chiefs versus the Bengals and the Rams versus the 49ers with the winners playing each other for the Super Bowl. This is how we see the games breaking down. Between the Chiefs and the Bengals, I'm going to say the Bengals win 27-24. If there's anybody that can outscore Patrick Mahomes, it's Joe Burrow. Joe Burrow, LSU's championship quarterback, has never lost a deciding game, not in high school, not in college, not in the NFL. He's never lost an elimination game in his life. Think about that. That's insane. So, yes, Patrick Mahomes might be the best quarterback in the NFL. It's hard to imagine anybody outscoring them. But I'm going to go with Joe Burrow. I'm going to go with the team that's hot, the team that seems like a team of destiny. I'm going to say the Bengals win 27-24. Josh, who do you pick between the Bengals and the Chiefs?
You know, I was playing Madden the other day, and the Chiefs absolutely whooped me. So I have to go with the Bengals.
That's right. You shouldn't do that to Joshua, Chiefs. Bengals 27-24. I'm putting them in the Super Bowl. The other game, the Rams versus the 49ers. The 49ers are a scrappy team with a really good defense, but their quarterback's shoulder is hurt, and he hasn't performed very good in the playoffs. The Rams, in my mind, just have too much talent. And I might be way off base, but I just don't see this game being very close. I'm going to say Rams 28 and 49ers 9. Yes, I said 49ers 9. Joshua, do you have the Rams or the 49ers winning this game?
I think the Rams.
The Rams.
It actually is something that I've kept up with a little bit. So I actually do think the Rams.
Yeah, I just think they have too much talent. I don't see the 49ers being able to score enough points to beat them. So that would mean that we would have the Bengals and the Rams in the Super Bowl, which would be, in a lot of ways, two teams that most people would not have picked coming into the season. The Rams with a new quarterback and a lot of turnover in their roster, but a lot of talent too. And the Bengals, who have been one of the surprise teams in the NFL. We knew that Joe Burrow was good. We didn't know that his talent would translate quite like this at the NFL level. But the NFL playoffs have actually been a lot of fun. And the first games, the first rounds last weekend was terrific. And I think the Chiefs and Bengals is going to be a fantastic game this weekend. And we'll see next time we talk how our predictions shake out. Any parting comments on the Super Bowl, Joshua?
Go sports.
Go sports.
And I can't wait for the commercials.
That's actually my favorite part. And I like football. But yeah, the commercials are a lot of fun. All right, enough of that from the world of sports. We switch to this, the news and the world of the paranormal. And for our first story, we go to the sky in Texas. 2021, that was last year, is pulling out all the tricks as fish rain from the sky in a rare phenomenon in Texas. As 2021 comes to a close, a city in Texas had one last unexpected event, raining fish. Residents in Texarkana, which I've actually been to, Texarkana. It's called that because it's on the border of Arkansas, and there's a little bridge. And on one side, you're in Texas, and on the other side, you're in Arkansas. And they're both called Texarkana. So, fun fact. Almost 200 miles from Dallas saw fish fall from the sky and land in their yards or on sidewalks. 2021 is pulling out all the tricks, including raining fish in Texarkana today. And no, this is not a joke, the city of Texarkana wrote in a Facebook post on Wednesday. The city said raining fish is a phenomenon called animal rain. Animal rain. That's a real thing, apparently, Joshua.
I have heard of it.
You've heard of animal rain.
I have indeed.
Of course you have. That's why I have you on the show. Animal rain happens when small water animals such as frogs, crabs, or small fish are swept into waterspouts. James Audrich told WCIA that he was working at a used car dealership when he heard loud noises outside. There was a loud crack of thunder, and when we opened up the bay door, I looked outside and it was raining real hard and a fish hit the ground, he told the outlet. Another person posted a video on Twitter captioned, "Yep, it rained fish in my house." This isn't the first time that fish fell from the sky. In 2017, teachers and students at an elementary school in Oroville, California, reported seeing 100 fish land on the school's playground and roof. While it's uncommon, it happens as evidenced in several places in Texarkana today, the city wrote in the Facebook post. And please, for the sake of everyone, let's tiptoe into 2022 as quietly as possible. So how does this work exactly? Fish get swept, small fish get swept into a water spout. I don't understand how this happens. Why are fish falling from the sky, Josh? Can you please explain this to me?
So it's not a water spout like a faucet. It's not like that. It's like a water spout, kind of like a water tornado, basically. And okay. It sucks them up into the sky, and they just get flung, apparently, into people's backyards in Texas. But that has something. It's very rare, but it has happened before.
See, most of the time, I feel like a smart man. But when I'm reading a story about fish raining from the sky, I'm not a smart man. That's how I feel. I'm going Forrest Gump because I just cannot imagine being in my yard or at my job and it starts storming and there's fish hitting the ground everywhere. I would think it was the end of the world.
Or that you just got free dinner.
Or that you got free dinner. I'm talking some fish filet. Yeah, or that, either one. But a strange phenomenon that happened in Texarkana, Texas. I mean, that's just a bizarre thing to witness and experience. And of course, it happens right before 2022. Who would have known? From Texarkana, we go to death. Yes, death. Elon Musk thinks you should die. When billionaire Elon Musk isn't busy running Tesla and SpaceX's CEO, where he's attempting to transform how we drive and turn humans into a multi-planet species, he's not researching the secret to immortality. I'm not aware of any secret technology to combat aging, Musk said during an interview this week at the Wall Street Journal CEO Council Summit. Moreover, even if humans could live much longer, Musk said that wouldn't be such a good thing for human society on the whole. It's important for us to die, because most of the time people don't change their mind. They just die, he said. If you live forever, we might become a very ossified society where new ideas cannot succeed. That is a valid point, but also not where I saw this article going. Elon is saying that we need to die because otherwise new ideas would not take hold. Interesting. The concept that people don't change their minds, even when provided with factual evidence to the contrary, has been repeatedly confirmed in studies across the last 50 years. Therefore, Musk argued, if people were to live longer or become immortal, it could have a detrimental effect on society where ideas stagnate and fester rather than being evolved or overtaken by succeeding generations of people. This isn't the first time Musk has gone after aging population's impact on everyone else. He recently argued for age limits on holding public office and echoed those sentiments during the Wall Street Journal conference. I'm not poking fun at aging, he said. I am saying we've got people in very important positions that have to make decisions that are critical to the security of our country. Then they probably need to have sufficient presence of mind and cognitive ability to make those decisions well, because the whole country is depending on them. The current U.S. president, for instance, is 79 years old and was born during World War II. The last U.S. president left office at age 74. In Musk's opinion, neither man would have been able to hold office as they're both over the age of 70. So Elon Musk thinks that we should die. I don't know. I do hear a lot of people that have money like him and that are into the investing in sciences are trying to do the opposite. They're trying to figure out how we can live forever, how we can stop aging. How we can treat aging like any other disease and counteract it. I understand what he's saying about society. I don't know. What's your take on this, Joshua?
You know, Elon Musk says a lot of crazy things, but I do kind of understand what he's saying here. He's not saying that we should just go out and die, but he's saying that there aren't going to be new ideas to kind of circulate around or old bad ideas to like kind of die off. So I kind of understand what he's saying because there's a lot of old like ideology, you can just look at the history of this country that just had to die off after a point. So it's not necessarily that I'm
like
saying
racism.
Exactly. It's not gone like yet. Maybe. It's a lot different than it was.
You know, some of y'all grandpas, the fact that they still alive, that's why we holding on to the racism. Elon Musk saying, let your granddaddies die and let them take racism with them. That's my Cliff Notes version of what he's saying, basically.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with that.
Yeah, I don't know. Elon Musk is he's a funny dude. It really seems like he's talking about this whole age thing and how you should have a age limit for people to hold office. He's taking a pretty direct shot at Biden right there, right?
He is, definitely.
I mean, I saw where he called him? He said President Biden is a wet sock or something.
Mm-hmm.
Something like that. Elon Musk is crazy. He's smart. He's worth a whole lot of money, but I can't make up my mind. I need to read more of what he says or watch some interviews because I really don't know. where I stand with Elon. Sometimes he does stuff, and I think that's really dope, like the Boring Company. And then sometimes he says stuff that's so off the wall that I'm like, yeah, I don't know about that.
Yeah, you know, he wants to take us to Mars, so I will like him for now. But if that changes, see how I feel about him.
I'm down. I'm down to go to Mars. That would be pretty cool. From Elon Musk's brain, we go to NASA for our next story, ironically. Many incarnations of Jesus. NASA enlisted theologians to study faith implications of alien life. News recently broke that NASA hired religious experts to ponder spiritual implications of discovering extraterrestrial life. From 2016 to 2017, the U.S. Space Agency earmarked $1.1 million for a nine-month study at Princeton Center of Theological Inquiry. Recruited to research the societal implications of astrobiology were 24 theologians, including the Reverend Dr. Andrew Davison, an Anglican priest and biochemist from Cambridge. He recently described his role in the study and has a forthcoming book titled Astrobiology and Christian Doctrine. Will Storer, CTI's director, says NASA's goal was to have serious scholarship being published about the profound wonder and mystery and implication of finding microbial life on another planet. On a blog for Cambridge Divinity faculty, Andrew Davison details his role in the study. He focused mainly on Christology, but also pondered topics such as creation and the dignity of human life. Davison sums up his research as a survey of the main topics in Christian belief, what is sometimes called systematic theology, from the perspective of life elsewhere in the universe. I'm thinking about its bearing on the doctrines of creation, sin, the person and work of Jesus, redemption, revelation, eschatology, and so on. The most significant question there is, writes Davison, is probably whether one would respond theologically to the prospect of life elsewhere in terms of there having been many incarnations of Jesus. He's also pondering the doctrine of creation, especially in terms of how it deals with themes of multiplicity and diversity. Calling creation a generous gift from God, he says that would apply equally to whatever other life forms might be out there in the universe. Davison notes, perhaps the main discovery I would report on today is finding just how frequently theology and astrobiology have been a topic in popular writing for at least a half century. In his upcoming book, Andrew Davison writes, non-religious people seem to overestimate the challenges that religious people would experience if faced with the evidence of alien life. If such proof is found, he predicts that earthlings will turn to their religious tradition for guidance to grapple with various implications for the standing and dignity of human life. Whether we detect extraterrestrial life in a decade or only in future centuries, or perhaps never at all, he writes, it will be useful to have thought through the implications in advance. Yeah, so that's pretty interesting. NASA spent $1.1 million studying the theological implications of discovering extraterrestrial life. I'm going to let you take the lead on this one, Joshua. What stands out to you about that story, or what is surprising about it?
I've heard people talk about that before, and a lot of people like to say it's going to cripple every religion ever. That's just not true at all. People are going to like hold on tight to what they believe, and whether or not it like kind of adapts to that. A lot of people don't realize that the idea of extraterrestrial life doesn't actually contradict very many, if any, religions. So I think it'd be kind of like an adjustment period for some people. But I really don't think it would have that big of an impact. I believe it was the Vatican said that they were like willing to accept alien life and that it wouldn't like accept that it existed and it wouldn't really change anything.
Yeah, so they did. They came out and said that. That's right.
Yeah. And a lot of people think it's going to be like that. Oh, gotcha moment. Like this proves all your religions wrong, but it's just not going to do that.
Yeah.
Regardless of the authenticity of a religion, the fact is that people are going to hold on to that. And the thing that you mentioned earlier about being presented with evidence, like the thing that Elon Musk said about being presented with evidence that's contradictory actually ends up strengthening your beliefs you had previously. It's called the backfire effect. And that could be something that could go into effect. But I don't even think that would be assuming that it did contradict religions, and I really don't think it would. I know it wouldn't contradict Christianity. I don't know too much about the actual details of others, but I really don't think it would change anything other than it would rewrite every science book we've ever written.
For sure, yeah.
Change like almost everything, but that would be one of those things that I couldn't really see it having too profound an impact on.
Yeah, I I agree. I don't think that it would necessarily falsify or mean that Christianity was not true or real or could not be the truth. I just think that it would maybe expand our understanding of that truth. I think that you know, there's all kinds of beliefs, and you start talking to people that have religious beliefs about extraterrestrials, and a lot of them are pretty closed off to it. And then others, I've heard people talk about how UFO sightings and aliens and all these things are really just demonic forces. I'm not saying that that is what I believe. I'm just saying that's something that I have heard people espouse and say. So I think if we for sure learned that there was actual intelligent life somewhere, not just like microbes, but actual intelligent life somewhere else in the galaxy, I think there would be a certain segment of the religious population that would say, you know, don't believe that, don't go near that, don't talk to them, don't, like, this is not of God, this is fallen creation, this is Nephilim, this is demons, these are things that we don't want to mess with. There would be a certain segment that would say that. But for me, the more interesting thought process or thought experiment is, if you are a Christian and you're someone of faith, what would it mean that there were created beings other places in the world, in the galaxy, in the universe? That's a much more fun thought experiment to me. You know, we tend to believe that we are, we're just very self-centered. We tend to think we put ourselves at the center. We're the only ones in the galaxy. We are the most important. Everything revolves around us. We tend to kind of have that outlook. In the Christian faith, Jesus died for our sins so that we could have a relationship with God and be reconciled and have eternal life. And then if we found out that there were intelligent beings on other planets, what would that mean? What is their situation? Was there also a Jesus on their planet that had to die for their sins? Was there one Jesus that died on Earth and that was good for aliens on other planets? Is there a galaxy, a planet, a bunch of created beings somewhere else that did not even have to have a Jesus to die for their sins because they never sinned? Is there a world out there where creation is as it was intended to be, and mistakes and sin and wrong never even entered into the picture? So to me, that's what's more interesting and more fun to think about than to just either say there's no chance, and if there is, it proves that the Bible and everything else is false, or to label it as evil and not go near it. The more fun thought process to me is, what would this mean? What implications would it give? How can it kind of widen our view of things? And I think there would also be a lot of people on the History Channel that were pretty stoked too.
Yeah, there'd be a whole bunch of new shows about aliens after that happened, and maybe some about like the religious aspects of aliens.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't watched an episode of Ancient Aliens in a few years, but hey, if I'm flipping the channels and it's on, especially if it's nap time, if I'm just gonna lay on the couch, that's a show that I could just have on in the background, sort of listen to, because I still find it interesting. I don't care, it's interesting. For our last story in the world of the paranormal, we go to Egypt, kind of. Mummy smugglers reveal vast antiquities black market. That's right, my babies. We talking about black market mummies, a type of news that you can only find from a shed in Alabama. The rescue of an ancient Egyptian mummy sarcophagus this month from alleged smugglers in New York, the first time authorities say an international artifact smuggling ring was dismantled within the United States, sounds more like the plot of a movie than reality. Amazingly, however, mummy smuggling not only still happens today, it was once so common that enough mummies were available to be ground up and sold as powder, archaeologists revealed. Dang. Would you buy some mummy powder, Joshua?
I'd rather just buy a whole mummy instead of just the mummy powder.
Like, it's kind of creepy to have a mummy because it's somebody's remains, and, like, that's probably not very respectful. But also, like, how dope would it be to have a mummy, you know?
When I was, you know, I was homeschooled, and when I was, like, 6 or 7, we were studying ancient Egypt, and we actually mummified a chicken that we had for years, like, probably 10, 12 years, and he was just fine.
I'm sorry. Did you say that you mummified a chicken?
To be fair, it was a chicken we got from the store, but yes. His name was Chester, and his sarcophagus was a shoebox that we put gems and spray-painted gold.
You This is real life. You mummified a chicken.
I am not making that up. I will go and find the old pictures and send them to you of the process because it took like 3 weeks.
If you send me pictures of you mummifying a chicken, I will tweet them out to the world from our official In the Shed with Wes account.
I will most definitely do that.
Mummy powder was something you could buy in pharmacies up until 1920 because people thought it was a type of medication, said Egyptologist Regine Schultz, curator of ancient art at the Walters Art Museum in Baltimore. Today's black market for mummy and other antiquities is in the billions of dollars, though exact numbers aren't known. Besides not having a clear bead on the breadth of trafficking in Egyptian artifacts, scientists and officials say it's often difficult to protect the precious artifacts as the Egyptian desert is so vast. The trafficking of mummies traces back to medieval times. When Christianity and Islam were rising, mummification was not really the main habit anymore, although we have some mummies of Christian bishops in Egypt that do date back to the 7th and 8th centuries AD, Schultz said. So from the Middle Ages on, mummies were a bit curious and strange. Nevertheless, so many mummies were made during ancient Egypt times that enough were available to make mummy powder or mumia. Mamma mia, I got some mummy powder. Whose pigment one assumes was a dark brown, said Gary Vitkin, director of the Walters Art Museum. Mummification was not just something for pharaohs or the upper class. It was the normal thing in ancient Egypt for hundreds of years, Schultz said. My aunt lived for many years in Egypt in the 1950s and 60s, and sandstorms would often reveal tiny remains of mummies, sometimes a little wrapping, sometimes a little bone. How crazy is that? So we talked about rain and fish, which was already bizarre enough. But imagine being in Egypt and there's a sandstorm, which I'm sure is fairly common in certain months. And then you just look over and like, oh, it's a mummy. That would be pretty dope. Like, that would be exciting. I think that would be really neat.
Yeah, that would be you just kind of walk in and you just happen to see a mummy. That'd probably be the most interesting thing of your day.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I don't even think I've even seen an actual real mummy even in a museum. Like, not in person have I ever seen a mummy. Outside of the chicken, have you ever seen an actual real mummy?
No, I have been to a, like, mummy exhibit, but they didn't have any actual mummies there. They just had sarcophaguses and the stuff that they found, like, in the tombs.
Add it to the bucket list. Gotta see a mummy. Given the way mummification helped preserve the body, people thought mummies had something to do with eternity, and in turn, that mummy powder could be used as medication. As strange as grinding up ancient corpses for sale might be in modern times, mummies were seen as objects back then and not people. There was nothing illegal about it. Nowadays, smuggling mummies and any other antiquities out of Egypt is strictly against the law. People began to say, wait a minute, this is a person that should be treated in a respectful way, not as a thing, Schultz said. Still, while traffic in mummies and Egyptian antiquities has fallen, a black market for them still exists, and the recent upheaval in Egypt may have made it easier for criminals to loot the country. In the latest news in this front, on July 13th, federal prosecutors announced they had busted an international antiquities smuggling ring charging antiquities dealers in New York, Michigan, and Dubai with conspiring with a collector in Virginia to smuggle Egyptian artifacts into the United States and launder money to further their crimes. The prizes in question included a Greco-Roman-style Egyptian sarcophagus, a nesting set of three Egyptian sarcophagi, a set of Egyptian funerary boats. Oh, okay, like a boat for a funeral is what that is, I think. And Egyptian limestone figures, a collection with an estimated market value of $2.5 million. This is a groundbreaking case for Homeland Security investigations. It's the first time an alleged cultural property network has been dismantled within the United States, said James Hayes, special agent in charge with U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement and Homeland Security investigations. In addition to smuggling cultural property, this case also focuses on significant money laundering activity. This is notable because the illicit sale of cultural property is the third most profitable black market industry, following narcotics and weapons trafficking. Yeah, so I thought that was something very interesting and worthwhile to share in the paranormal segment of our show tonight, because honestly, I had no idea that Egyptian antiquities was still a market that that people were smuggling things in from Egypt and trading and selling and using them to launder money. I didn't know that was still something that was going on. I've seen it in the movies. But I thought that stuff happened back in the 20s. I didn't think it was still going on today. Were you aware that that's still a thing?
That was actually something I did not. I mean, it doesn't surprise me that it was still going on, but I wouldn't have thought that it was kind of as big of a market as it is now. I would have thought that it would have kind of died out by now.
Yeah, they said in the billions, like with a B.
Yeah, that is a large consumer base, which is very surprising.
I mean, I haven't searched on eBay, but now I'm kind of wondering, because sometimes on the Bay, you find some things that aren't strictly speaking legal.
Very much.
In fact, I once sold something that was illegal on eBay, on accident, of course, on accident. It was actually really cool. It was something that I was going to keep for myself. Should I be admitting this on air? I don't know. I can't get in trouble for this anymore, I don't think. Can I, if this happened several years ago?
I guess it depends on what it was.
Okay. Well, I'll just say this. There was a knife. I had a knife, and I had bought it with the purpose of wanting to resell it. And the handle of the knife was actually the jawbone of a black bear. It was pretty dope. It was like the jawbone had been stained. The teeth were still there. And then the steel for the knife was Damascus steel. It was a beautiful knife. Knives are something that I collect. Only have one pistol, but I have probably like, I don't know, 60 or 70 knives, pocket knives, hunting knives. It sounds crazy if you're not in a state like mine, but I collect knives. And, this one I bought with the intent to resell it. And, it never crossed my mind that the fact that it was made from the jawbone of, the handle was made from the jawbone of a bear might not be legal. Because I know that people hunt bears and some people even eat them. And I was like, oh, that's just really neat. Only after selling it did I see a disclaimer online about what states it was allowed in and what states it wasn't, and you could have this or that. And it's really pretty sketchy because you couldn't have certain parts of the black bear. You couldn't use it for certain purposes. So it was one of those things that was right there on the line. And it's possible that I sold something illegally on eBay. Am I going to jail?
Possibly.
That's not good. I couldn't make it in jail. I would never survive. Well, you might be canceled for your comments about Kim Jong-un being a good influence on Dennis Rodman.
Yeah.
I might go to jail. It's been a great show. I've had a good time hanging out with you, Josh. You're always welcome on the show. You always bring good pieces of knowledge and information for us to learn. The stuff on North Korea was great. We've kind of been all over the world tonight, and we're very appreciative of you joining us.
Thank you for having me on. It's always a pleasure. We always end up having so much fun talking about the most random things, but very happy to have gotten to come on again.
Absolutely, and we'll have you on again in the near future. But that's all for this week. You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here. I can't either. It's back in the house and out of the shed for me. Thanks again for listening to episode 32. Make sure to subscribe, like, share, and review. It really does help. If you have any paranormal experiences, opinions about sports, or politics that you'd like to share, you can email the show at intheshedwithwes@gmail.com. Again, that's intheshedwithwes@gmail.com. I might even read it on air. Look for us on Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, the Good Pods app, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And make sure to follow us on Twitter at InTheShed4. Tune in again next week when we'll hit the headlines, talk some sports, and take a look at common superstitions. This has been In the Shed with Wes Anderson, the best news show in the land covering politics, sports, and the paranormal. Have an adventurous and fulfilling weekend. I'll catch you tools later. Peace out, Boy Scout. Meemaw, we made it!